cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Backtracks, the Music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined, as always, by John Mariano. And John, right off the hop, we got to say, normally this would be a Corey pick show because you picked the last one, but you were so damn excited to talk about this song and this show here tonight. I'm letting you have another crack at it. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, but weirded out. You and I, full disclosure to anybody listening, it's been like 2 weeks since Corey and I last recorded. And as we were exiting the arena last week, I mentioned to Corey, I know what my next song is going to be. I know what movie it's going to be from. And like, you guys are going to know both by a minute or two from now. But it's very weird because it became much more relevant in the week that passed. And I said to Corey, I'm like, look, we're going to cover the same song, but we got to pivot and like pivot, like where Ross and Rachel are trying to move a couch up a stairwell. So here we are. And I had told Corey, I desperately wanted to talk Metallica at some point soon on one of these podcasts, sometime soon being the next time we record. And I wanted to talk about the needle drop from Old School when Master of Puppets starts playing. Well, here we are. And in about a week, the Stranger Things folks blew the roof off of everything with that song. And Corey and I are going to be talking some Stranger Things and Master of Puppets tonight.
And I can't wait. I've watched every season of Stranger Things. I really loved season four. I know that a lot of people had some issues with stuff. You could say, like, you know, maybe the stuff in Russia was a little weak, or the, you know, kind of nitpicks here and there, but the acting was just so good through everything. And those final episodes, just phenomenal. And this moment, especially, that features Master of Puppets. Oh my God, maybe one of my favorite moments in television in the last 10 years.
So I think before we get into the song, and we need to talk a lot of Metallica too, but let's kind of recap our feelings on Stranger Things. And I think probably the easiest way is I'm going to try to run it a little bit right now, Corey, and hit it in like two or three different parts. So my first part is this: if you had to rate the seasons from 4 to 1, right? And I don't mean the numbers, but like, what's your fourth, your least favorite season? What's your favorite season, and what's in between? What's your bottom season? What's your least favorite season?
You know what? I'd have to say probably 2. I didn't, when Elle kind of took off to Chicago for that little bit, that kind of lost me. I still liked it, but probably 2 would be the bottom for me.
Yeah, I flip-flop between 2 and 3. The Chicago stuff falls a little flat for me. There's parts of each season that might fall a little flat for me. This particular season, the new season, I adored, but every time they cut to the pizza truck, I wanted to punch myself in the face.
Yeah, I understand that point very much, yes.
You know, as much as I loved what they did in season 3, going for the whole aesthetic of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
I felt like it might've been a little bit, forced. Season 2 has that great moment with Bob.
Yes. Bob would stand out in season 2. Absolutely.
And you know, it's like, as much as like season 2 gets its hate because of Chicago to me feels very 80s Claremont X-Men.
Okay.
And I've got a soft spot for that type of thing. I know it didn't stick the landing, but it has that cool vibe. I go with 3 as my bottom, and it's weird because the mall is really an amazing set piece.
It really is. And Maya Hawke is introduced in season 3, and she is phenomenal. To me, that is season 3. above too. Even just little things with Max and Elle. I really love the kids getting to be kids, those moments in three. And of course, Murray is introduced in three, right? Murray's fantastic.
So, and you're right. And I'm guessing three is your third favorite season.
Yeah.
So two is my third favorite season. Okay. And I elevate two for two reasons. And like you were talking about characters who are introduced. Mm-hmm. And as much as I love the Bob character, I love that Sean Astin does a riff on the Goonies with how he problem solves and puzzle solves and looks at the map and figures it all out. And it's a very Mikey from the Goonies moment, but also a little Samwise Gamgee with how he's going about this whole journey. And there's like little nods and touches to his old characters. And then there was another piece that I didn't pick up on my initial watch, but rewatching with my girls, when Paul Reiser is in the booth directing the essentially the space marines to go through the void, the girls were like, oh, he's the bad guy, he's playing the same character he played in Aliens, right. and you know, granted he's not the bad guy, but it's such a great mirror to that. And there were just these moments that they did from the demo dogs coming up and the blips on the radar feeling very Aliens. Mm-hmm. And Bob getting ripped apart, elevate that season emotionally a little bit more for me, as much as I do love Maya Hawke in that role and you know, some great new characters. I go season three, season two, and then I guess I'll go next. My second favorite season is season one. Mm-hmm. And it's tough because I adored season one and there are parts of season one I really love. The kids, for me, looking back on it now, are a little bit young to hold my interest. My interest is really, like we talk about, like storylines that fall flat or whatever. I'm not in love with the Amblin vibe of the kids. I enjoy more the horror movie vibe of the teenagers in season one and the thriller vibe of the adults. Mm-hmm. And like the genres that they're kind of stuck in more so than the kids in season one.
That's fair. I would agree with that as well, because that's how I would kind of put it too. I would put one, and one is very solid all the way through. Four, like you mentioned, anytime we cut to the pizza truck, you wanted to punch yourself. I get that. They're pretty inconsequential to anything. And there's this whole thing with Will that you're anticipating that goes absolutely nowhere. I'm sure they'll allude to it in season five, but it does nothing in this season. But there's just such strong character work with Hopper, with Max. Everyone's talking about the Dear Billy episode and how did Sadie Sink not get nominated for an Emmy for that episode. Some of the best acting I've seen in a long, long time. Absolutely phenomenal. To me, those elements... Yeah, there were some dips in four. I would put four as my number one and season one as my number two, just because season one was solid all the way through. Four had higher highs, even if it had some lower lows.
Not only that, four is like eight movies because they're all, people want to call them bloated episodes. Each episode, they're giving you a movie each time out, and each movie is self-contained enough, even though it's part of a greater story. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the season. Each one, to me, plays like its own movie, and they're so freaking good, man. Like, yeah. Are there low points? Yeah. But you're talking like I think the shortest episode is like an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there might be some low points, but like even the stuff I'm not crazy about with the pizza truck, there's some payoffs in the end that make it worth the journey.
Yeah.
And you know, the Eddie Munson character that gets introduced is so freaking good in this season and goes through such a journey himself from being this coward to this hero, this unknown hero. And he has one of the most metal moments. And I know everybody, rightfully so, is talking about the running up the hill right now. And we very easily could have covered that song and pandered to what people are doing, but we're kind of the, like, dude, you do End the Podcast will rock.
Yeah.
We do the Aerosmith podcast.
Yeah.
It felt like a right thing. I mean, we wanted to cover the song tonight, and the fact it was like great karma that Eddie Munson has this moment essentially in hell on a trailer with a red, being draped by a red curtain, sky behind him, playing Master of Puppets as we cut to the different characters and what they're going through at that time. The montage, the needle drop, the entire thing. And unlike old school, which we intended on talking about, they play the whole song. Mm-hmm. They let the whole thing go, and it plays beautifully.
So good. So good. And kudos to Metallica for, like, believing in the Duffer Brothers, because Duffer Brothers wrote this, like, it has to be Master of Puppets. And when Metallica, like, read the script and heard what they wanted to do, like, 100% use the song, it's perfect. And even now, when you have so-called, and I'm using air quotes, Metallica fans gatekeeping the bands, oh, people are fucking jumping on the Metallica bandwagon because of Stranger Things. Metallica's like, I don't care how people kind of come to the music or enjoy the music. The Metallica family is open to everyone. And that's something they've always maintained. And if new people are discovering Metallica because of Stranger Things, fan-fucking-tastic. And it actually, Master of Puppets has entered the Billboard song chart for the first time. It never charted when it was initially released, but it's charted now. So it's bringing new people to the band, because the scene and Joe Quinn, who played Eddie Munson, is so fucking good at that moment. It's unreal. It's one of my favorite moments of TV in the last decade.
Yeah, it's great TV. It's great use of music in an episode. It's such a story point too, because it's Eddie's hero moment. It's his, you know, spoiler alert, we're gonna probably talk a couple of spoilers here and there. It's his final rally, but this is the defining moment.
Yeah,
and you know, it's the moment where Eddie doesn't run away. And he spends the entire series being the coward. And this is the one where he's like, no, fuck you. This is metal up your ass, and I'm delivering it. And he does. And there's some great character work with it. Even him grabbing the axe to bring into the Upside Down, which is like an allegory for hell. And he slings it over his back, and off they go.
He had such a great arc in this whole season. It was fantastic. I'm sorry to see him go. But they were talking about Emmy snubs this year, and Sadie Sink, who played Max, and, of course, Millie Bobby Brown, who plays 11. Everyone's like, oh, they were snubbed. How about Joe fucking Quinn? What a great season of television he had, creating this character that's going to live on for years.
It's not fair, because this season – you could argue could have easily been Oscar nominated, because, like I said, there were eight, and not even eight mini movies. They were eight. Each episode had a $30 million budget and was,
yeah,
you know, 80 to 90 minutes long. The final episode's 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these are movies, Corey.
Mm-hmm. And good fucking movies.
Yeah.
Good movies. Like, oh, it was so good. And, even had Ty Trujillo, who actually did the guitar solo, like Eddie's guitar solo, is actually recorded by Ty Trujillo, who is the son of Robert Trujillo, current bass player for Metallica. That's pretty cool.
And we're not even talking about the villain of this season belongs up there in the pantheon of horror movie characters, with everyone from Michael Myers through Pennywise. And like everybody in between, you could throw Pinhead in there, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Chucky, Vecna belongs on that pantheon too.
100%. 100%. Love that villain. Love this season. Love this song. What do you say, John? You up for a little Metallica tonight?
Yeah, I am. And folks, normally we intertwine talking about the music and talking about the show. We hit front loaded this talking about the show. And look, Millie Bobby Brown deserves all the Emmys. Sadie Sink deserves all the Emmys. David Harbour, Winona Ryder, like this entire cast is phenomenal with their performances. They're captivating. If you're not watching Stranger Things, I know it's cool to feel like the popular thing is overhyped. This show isn't, it tickles your nostalgia muscles in all the right ways while creating a new mythology that fits in with a vibe, and I would say a very Stephen King vibe. You know, there was a Stephen King show a couple of years ago on Amazon Prime, and I feel like Stranger Things is doing what that show tried to do in a much cleaner, more entertaining way.
100%. Talk about acting. How about Noah Schnapp, who had nothing to do this season as Will, had some of the best acting moments, like the scene with him and Finn Wolfhard in the pizza wagon. Phenomenal fucking acting. That character had nothing to do all season, but he still knocked it out of the park.
See, but I disagree. Like, I feel like he carried emotional baggage. His character obviously has a crush on his best friend and is struggling with, you know, being in the closet.
We
assume, but his performance informs that he very much feels like he's in the closet. Like, and I'm saying it based on Noah Schnapp's performance more than anything. Mm-hmm. Really, I thought communicated that very well with very little dialogue to back it up.
So good. So good. The actor really carries this season. It makes it my favorite. But let's go back to the music. What do you say? Master Puppets, are you ready?
Would you drop the needle?
I will. Here we go.
Corey, the only thing that sucks about listening to this right now is I can't make my volume any louder because we're recording. And these opening riffs, this song starting at 150 miles per hour, is the reason why Spinal Tap makes things go to 11.
Amen, brother. I was just thinking back to, I lead such a sheltered life here in Saskatchewan. Nobody ever really comes here. And Metallica has only come a few times. And I kept thinking back, John, to 2018, September 15th, 2018, the very first time I saw Metallica. And when they hit those chords, dun, 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 and just the entire room just exploded. It's one of the most recognizable and best riffs in rock and roll. Everybody knows this song. I think from the, even my wife, who's not a big Metallica fan, when she was watching Stranger Things in her dun, 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 she said, oh, that's Master of Puppets. Like, you're fucking right, it's Master of Puppets.
So I was away on vacation and I did a slumber party with my girls. This dropped while we were away. I said, you girls want to steal some cookies from G-Ma's room? That's what we call my mom. And we grabbed some massive chocolate chip cookies. I'm like, let's go watch 5 hours worth of Stranger Things. And they were pumped. And when we got to this moment, my girls jumped onto their feet and they were thrashing their heads. They threw up the horns. Like, it just puts you right there. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so good. I watch it with my 10-year-old too, who actually is a Metallica fan, but she likes the later stuff. Like, I remember when I got their new album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct, because I bought tickets to the show. I got a free CD copy. I already had it on digital and I had it on vinyl, so I gave her the CDs. And she listened to that CD just on repeat. So that was kind of her basis for Metallica. when she heard that riff, like, Dad, is that Metallica? I'm like, you're fucking right it is. That's Master of Puppets. She absolutely dug the shit out of that.
What I love about this song, and a lot of songs I like are progressive songs, like you could take like In the Light, or you could take, you know, many songs like that, which progress. Metallica flips it on its head with Master of Puppets, and we'll get into it a little bit later. But this is a regressive song in a lot of ways, where we start 150 miles an hour, and they're going to slow it up for us in a bit.
Right.
And it's one of the, I think, the great playful things. And really, like, this song, while not my favorite Metallica song, is one of my favorites. My favorite, Full Disclosure, is Fade to Black. But this song really plays on that idea of being a regressive song. Corey, you've dabbled in the drums here and there.
A little bit, yep.
Can you give us any feedback on what you're hearing from Mr. Ulrich here?
You know, he said a lot of people have a lot of opinions on Lars Ulrich. I've always loved his drumming style. Like the drum sound is clean. Snare sounds great. I've always loved him as a player. I know he gets a lot of shit, especially around the St. Anger period, because, of course, he took the snare chains off. It has a very kind of dumb sound to his snare, and I'm not even exactly sure why he did that, but he gets a lot of grief from drummers. He's always been one of my favorite drummers, especially around this era. Like, you can't undersell the influence Lars has on the music in Metallica. It's him and James, basically, that kind of do everything, and then they kind of bring in whoever the bass player is, whichever era, and Kirk Hammett or Dave Mustaine, depending how early it is, that kind of add their accents. But Lars and James are the real driving force of Metallica. And for as much shit as he takes, for being a dick, the whole Napster stuff, or you go to the St. Anger the St. Anger movie, some kind of monster. A lot of people are turned off by him selling his art, and or his dad, all that kind of shit. I've always really liked Lars Ulrich. And he's drumming better than ever on this album. Like, when you talk about Master of Puppets, Ride the Lightning, that's kind of the one, two best albums for Metallica fans. And this is really Metallica at the height of their powers, and Lars Ulrich is right in the pocket here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more of a Ride the Lightning guy, and it's not like it's splitting hairs, right? But like, if you gun to my head, my favorite song comes off of Ride the Lightning, right? So that's going to be the one I'm going to go with. But like, these, like, their first like four albums out of the gate are just works of art.
100%. Now, are you one of those Metallica fans who say they've done nothing good after And Justice for All? Because I don't feel like I'm a true Metallica fan, because I've liked all their stuff, and I could pick songs off every album that I really love.
Look, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the first four are next level, right? Yeah. And I think that's a fair thing to say. Is, and that's not even knocking the Black Album, which is their most commercial hit,
right?
Right. But the first four to me are as close to perfection that a band with first four albums can have, right? Then you throw the Black Album in there, which, you know, I feel is a little bit less of the sound of Metallica I like. And with concurring albums, I feel that way too. It's not to say it's bad. It's not to say it's unlistenable. I listen to all of it. I listen to all Metallica. I think Metallica's baseline at worst might be good or great, right? Like, that's the bottom line, would be a good or great, and it goes up from there. Mm-hmm. And these first four albums to me are the up from there.
Fair enough. I think back to a podcast I did with one, Krista McGee, who we both love dearly, about Reload. She picked Reload as one of her favorite Metallica albums. And there's a ton of great shit on Reload, but a lot of diehard Metallica fans don't even want to hear it, right? But Fuel, The Memory Remains, Unforgiven 2, I love that song. Better Than You is a song I really like. There's a lot of really good shit on Reload and Load, and even St. Anger, which is widely considered their worst album. I really like the track Some Kind of Monster and, you know, St. Anger, even Frantic. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm a true Metallica fan because I can appreciate their later stuff. I love the Hardwire album. There's a lot of great tracks on there. I agree with you. The first four are about as perfect as you can get. But there's a ton of great shit, I think, on the later stuff as well.
But that's not to say that it's bad. Like, I think that's the mistake people make. Is like, oh, well, this stuff isn't as good as like the first few albums. No, absolutely not, right? But the first four albums are like the top masterpieces in the Louvre. And like, these are also excellent works of art that have been made over the years that might be also in the Louvre, but then it might not be those, it might not be like Michelangelo's David or something, yeah. Right? Like, it might not be the Mona Lisa, but it's another like amazing piece of art that you don't know nearly as well. Still awesome, excellent art, right? Like, that's what we're talking about. It's really splitting hairs between what people say is bad Metallica. Bad Metallica is amazing something else.
I don't even think bad Metallica is a thing that exists.
No, but there are some quote unquote Metallica fans that would convince you,
yeah,
that bad Metallica is a thing, or they're not as good as they used to be. Or like, people get older, things change, tastes change, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? These the like Kill 'Em All to End Justice to me, there isn't a better run from bands. There are runs that are as good, but there isn't a better run on albums from those four.
You know, I don't disagree, but Van Halen 1, Van Halen 2, Limited Children first, Fair Warning, I think is right up there.
I said there isn't a better one, Corey.
Oh, sorry.
Right, like if your argument is here's one that's as good, right, and the next album, the Black Album, I'll throw up there as a fifth album. Go show me a band with five albums that are better than those five. You can find ones that have a run of five albums that are as good,
mm-hmm.
But go find me a run that's better. Is there a better way in music or any media at all that you have heard the power of addiction communicated?
Nope. And I was thinking about addiction songs that I know, and none hold a candle, I think, to this one.
You know, it really, to me, puts you in the place of the addict, mm-hmm. and how they feel helpless to the disease. I know it's a heavy song, it's a hard song, it's one of the greatest heavy hard songs of all time. It's fast, it's powerful, but as a poem, it's beautiful, mm-hmm. Right, it's beautifully written, and it's painful, right, and it's sad and tragic.
And that's the strength of James Hetfield. I had this conversation with my wife about his lyrics are poetry. Even in some of what are considered his lesser songs, like I played her a section from I Disappear. I'm like, listen to the lyrics. That's poetry. You get that here too. Taste Me, You Will See. More Is All You Need. Dedicated to How I'm Killing You. Like James Hetfield as a lyricist. Holy fuck. Like I do a show, a Van Halen show, which features like David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar lyricists. We do an Aerosmith show with Steven Tyler, who's a great lyricist. James Hetfield, God, is in the conversation for one of my favorite lyricists of all time.
Oh, no doubt. And he's been doing it for what, 40 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Look, they don't get talked about sometimes as much as some of these other bands. In some circles, they get talked about more than these other bands. One of the truly great American bands of all time. 100%. Right? And one of the great bands of all time. But like when we talk about greatest American bands and the Doors get thrown up there and the Eagles get thrown up there and Fleetwood Mac gets thrown up there, Van Halen, Aerosmith, right? Metallica belongs in every bit of that conversation as these other great bands.
Absolutely. And we should talk about the moment in the show that this song is played, because the kids kind of have this mission. They want to try and beat the big bad of the season, right? So in the Upside Down, there's all these like bats that kind of attack them early on. They're like, well, if we want to get to Vecna and defeat him, we need a distraction. And that distraction is Dustin and Eddie Munson getting his axe, getting his amp, and playing Master of Puppets and drawing all these bats to him. And it's one of the most visually striking, fantastic images in TV I've seen in a very long time.
So my initial reaction when I first heard the opening lyrics to the song, and I was me overthinking things, is that they should have played Ozzy because it was bats.
Yeah.
And what I wasn't thinking about, and I caught as I was listening to lyrics and everything, I know the lyrics are very much about drugs and everything else, but Vecna is very much been the master of puppets this season in a lot of ways, just moving the pieces around and being this truly unbeatable master, treating all the characters as his own puppets up until the point where his murders are him psychically climbing into somebody or whatever he does and breaking their limbs in the most painful manner and popping their eyeballs or rolling their eyeballs back into their head, blinding them before he snaps their jaw or neck and kills them, right? It's among the most brutal deaths, murders that you will see on any screen in any movie or TV show ever, right? I put this up there with Joe Pesci getting beaten down with a baseball bat in Casino.
Oh, wow.
And this is in
a striking sequence. That is
right.
Yeah. Great pull.
But like you look at his murders and these are serial killer murders. Corey, he does this like three or four times over the course. He does it four times over the course of the season. I think we see it five or six times because we should see some murders from earlier years.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody dies the same way. And it's brutal. It's up there with the Nightmare on Elm Street when the girlfriend at the beginning of the movie gets dragged to the ceiling and murdered in front of her boyfriend and he's staring at her, right? And it's horrific and scary. And they found a way in a TV show to capture that feeling over and over again. Vecna has a presence of forget about Freddy Krueger and everything. He has the presence of Pennywise when he shows up, where he's playing on your greatest fears. And then he feels like Freddy in a way in his ritualistic attacks of you and getting into your mind and showing you your greatest fears and presenting them to you. It's such a well-drawn-out homage to so many great horror elements.
That is very well said. But the whole time I'm thinking, I'm hearing a voice in my head, and maybe you are too, is from one Christy McVie, and she's saying, shut up and play the fucking song. Because she loves Metallica. So here we go. Blinded by me, can't see a thing. You just talked about that. The eyeballs getting popped in the show. Said, and I know James Hetfield said, yeah, we wrote the song about, or I wrote the lyrics about drugs, but it means something different to everybody who hears it. And obviously, Duffer Brothers were able to incorporate that into the season of Stranger Things and make it work perfectly. And that's the mark, I think, of a great song.
Corey, just call my name because I'll hear you scream, which is literally what Max is doing, trying to get his attention.
Yes.
Right? She's calling out Vecna.
Yep.
In the real world, basically saying, what are you afraid of? Come and get me. And before she gets pulled into the trance where he goes after her and leaves himself vulnerable. Like, it's such a well thought out, using this song, you don't get a better judgment call in media. It's such a perfect use, because if you look at the lyrics and look at what's happening in the show, this is what our show theme music is all about. The themes are all there in the song.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And right back there is where like James Hetfield alludes to, like, we're talking about cocaine here, right? You know, chop me up on a mirror, right? We're talking about addiction. We're talking about cocaine, and it's hold on you and how hard this is. It's so gut-wrenching when you look at the lyrics of the song as you're listening to it, to hear how James is, you know, with his growl and his voice, is roaring through this song, and they're plowing through it. This song to me feels like a bad drug trip where it starts 150 miles per hour and then you're going to come crashing down and slow down. And as much as it's, you know, I had called it a regressive song, it very much takes you through a bad trip or through a drug crash, you know, where you're on speed and then you crash hard. And right there is the crash. We could hear even the way they produce the voice there. It's like, master. Like, you can feel it. They slow it down intentionally, and the guitar is about to switch and play off. What do you think about the change here, Corey?
Love the change. It's so symbolic to what the song's about. Like, you talked about it all show here about how it's regressive, how we're going to get to that moment, and this is that moment. that lull in the song, it's constructed so brilliantly for such a young band like Metallica. You know, this came out in, what, 86?
This is the third album.
It's unbelievable, the sophistication here. And the whole time I'm thinking, name another band that has had arguably three of the best bass players in rock and roll in their band. Of course, Cliff Burton was the bass player here. He's been described as like the Jimi Hendrix of bass. Like, he's just unreal talent. And then you go from that to Jason Newsted, who's an amazing bass player. Now to Robert Trujillo, who's one of the best modern bass players. Like, it's phenomenal, the musicianship in this band. But to me, this song really showcases James Hetfield, especially with his lyrics and everything. Like, and I know I think I'm going to get a big hug from Christy McGee because she loves James Hetfield. But he is one of the greatest figures, I think, in modern music, not just rock and roll. Like, look at his lyrics, look at his riffs, look at everything. James Hetfield is a fucking genius. And this song is a perfect encapsulation of that.
So here's a fact. Corey, you're usually good at pulling up the facts. That's what I've been doing in the background. Mm-hmm. The song was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant enough for preservation in the National Recording Registry by the United States Library of Congress in 2016. The first metal recording to do so.
Wow.
And what's interesting is Metallica, as you know, this is their third studio album. Mm-hmm. Metal was so niche that there was no singles off of this album.
Right.
Yeah, the first single will be one off of And Justice on their fourth album. Mm-hmm. This is their most popular song that they play live. But it was not a single. Like, we talk about singles all the time on all our other podcasts, you know, covering bands. Here we have a band that are one of the legendary bands of all time. They're three albums in and don't have a single release. So one other little tidbit, Corey, you were name dropping Kristen McGee and James Hetfield, and this being one of the songs that really emphasizes them. There's two massive guitar solos in this. This first one that we're listening to now and the thrashing one we're going to hear in a little bit. Thrashing one is Kurt Hammett, which we're very familiar with how his solos sound. They're phenomenal. But this very fun diddly on the softer side of things is James Hetfield. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I actually didn't. No.
So what we're listening to right now is a little James Hetfield giving us some guitar solo.
Very underrated guitar player, James Hetfield. And I just read an article that pointed out that fact that James Hetfield, in terms of rock guitarists, really should be considered in the upper echelon.
Metallica never want to go too soft. They go soft just long enough before you can feel them kick you in your gut. And it just starts to well up and build here. And it's one of my favorite musical moments in song is where we're going right now. Because it's like here, we're gonna play with you a little bit. We came out 150 miles per hour. We're gonna slow it down, and now we're gonna build back up. And it's coming. Like you guys came from Metallica, and it's coming.
It's coming. And anyone who's seen Metallica live and has heard Master of Puppets knows it's even better live. Like, it's good here, even better live.
Well, they're one of those bands, right? Like, their studio albums are phenomenal. I'll listen to them all the time. But I have their live stuff. I have some bootleg stuff, and I have some non-bootleg stuff. I will put them live in any era up against any of their studio stuff.
I am right there with 100%. Now you talked about Lars there. He's kicking in with the double bass, right? And you can hear that just driving that fucking metal beat. I love it.
And we're going to get into one of the greatest, like, what do you call it? Arena chants of all time now.
The call and response, right? Where the crowd gets like yelled up, master, master. And then James kicks in. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Like it's one of the great ones of all time. And I was at Woodstock 99 with them doing this. And like I've talked about Woodstock 99 on some of our other podcasts that we've done together. And Metallica at Woodstock 99, I put up there with any other show I've been to. I don't know that I necessarily have a greatest thing I've seen live, but this is right there. They were playing in the rain in Woodstock, New York, or Saugerties. I don't remember where I was, but wherever the hell 99 was in New York, I was in a field. It was raining. Metallica was playing. It was like 1 a.m. and my God, they just blew me away. This is Kurt here, and you know, we talk about great rock guitarists, great metal guitarists of all time. Kurt Hammett for me is one of my all-time favorites. Like, I could listen to this 7 days a week.
They're with you. And I know a lot of people are still like, oh, Dave Mustaine's better, all that kind of shit. Kurt Hammett, I don't know if he gets his due as being one of the greatest metal guitar players of all time.
I don't love the comparison of Dave's better or Kurt's better. My feeling is like Megadeth needed to happen. We needed Megadeth in our lives.
Yes, 100%.
And you know, to say who's better, who's worse, for me, Kurt's better for Metallica, because if it's not Kurt and Metallica, Megadeth never happens. Mm-hmm. And we miss out on all those great songs that Dave puts out with Megadeth. And like, it's always hurt my head when people have this conversation, because it's like, okay, let's just cancel out Megadeth then.
If we didn't have Megadeth, we wouldn't have So Far, So Pod, So What, the new podcast on the Deep Dive Podcasting Network about Megadeth.
Right. It astounds me. It's like, you have this, what happened was, you know, it didn't work out between Dave and Metallica, and it spun off another amazing band. They were so talented. Mm-hmm. Two bands spun out of it, and they're both legendary. Who cares who's better at anything? Just enjoy them for what they are.
I feel like Metallica fans maybe are a bit petty. Like the guys who say, you know, oh, Dave versus Kurt, or the first four albums are the only four albums you should consider. Just enjoy it all. Like,
I don't want to sit here and call out fans for being petty, because there are plenty of fans. Look, there are two on this podcast who aren't petty. Mm-hmm. Right. I think what Corey's saying is, be more like us. Who gives a shit? Just enjoy what you enjoy. If you only enjoy the first four albums, that's your prerogative, but don't shit on somebody for enjoying stuff beyond the first four albums.
Thank you. Right? Yeah, sorry. I didn't make that clear. That's exactly what I did. Yeah.
Don't shit on somebody for enjoying Megadeth, right? Love what you love and appreciate other people for loving shit you don't love. Mm-hmm. I can't argue with that. And right now, I waved at Corey, and I created a critical sin because I waved at Corey in the middle of a Kurt Hammett guitar solo.
I didn't want to stop it.
One of the greatest of all time. But I also wanted to call out how awesome this is. I also found one last tidbit on this song. This is the last fact I'm going to drop. But I had compared it to Cocaine earlier because of the mirror line. Yeah. But in interviews, James Hetfield has acknowledged that looking back on this song, it's probably very reflective of his relationship with alcohol, with James being a well-documented, he's talked about it a lot, his struggles with alcohol, and, you know, has said that this was probably him working through some of that, or it sounds like it lyrically, because when he looks at it, that's what he sees.
Is there a stronger four lines about addiction in rock music? I will occupy. I will help you die. I will run through you. Now I rule you too.
And sung in such a way to reflect that power with the instrumentals backing it up. Like, we're going out as strong as we came in, Corey. It's like, you know, I really wanted to do Metallica because we talk about them off air all the time. And this was really our opportunity to kick it into high gear on one of our podcasts, talking about our love for them. We almost did Metallica instead of Aerosmith for our other podcast and just said that there were too many people talking about Metallica out there.
Yeah.
And settled on Aerosmith. It very easily could have been a Metallica podcast, and I would have been just as happy.
Me too, which is why I'm glad we're doing this show, because Metallica has been in a few different movies and TV shows, so we can showcase their music and gush over it. I think the problem with doing a Metallica-centric podcast, especially if you want to get like the bad stuff and the good stuff, I don't know if there's any real bad stuff.
No, like I said, the baseline for Metallica is probably good. Right, not good enough, not okay, right? It's probably like, oh, that's a good song, right? That's probably the very baseline of Metallica, and it goes up from there. It doesn't have, they don't have average.
Yeah.
You know, their version of average is better than most. And I just want to say, I know we're working our way out of the song. Hats off to Eddie Munson for giving us a reason not to not talk about old school, but to table old school for the night, talk a little Stranger Things, give the entire cast and crew of that show the props they deserve for entertaining us. There's been some great releases on streaming, and you know what started out as the quote unquote nostalgia show on Netflix, and based on Camp Hero here in my backyard out on Long Island, but out on Montauk Point, that's where a lot of the stuff going on with Eleven and stuff in the show, the rumors of that stuff started there, and the Duffer brothers have admitted that they based it off of like stories from World War II here on Long Island from Camp Hero. And it's interesting because it's all like Long Island legend that is now pop culture history thanks to the show.
I didn't know that. Perfection. That's Master of Puppets from 1986 Metallica. John, VH1 said this is the third best metal song of all time. Can you think of what the first two are?
Do they have Crazy Train up there?
Crazy Train is number 9.
I was trying to think like VH1, but VH1 would consider metal.
Right.
Is Judas Priest up there?
Judas Priest is up there. Number 5. You got another thing coming.
VH1's tough on what they're going to... Are they like legitimate metal songs? Or are they like...
Some are. They also have Back in Black from AC/DC at number 4. Judas Priest at number 5 with You Got Another Thing Coming. Kiss is number 6 with Detroit Rock City. Iron Maiden is number 7, Number of the Beast. Slayer at number 8 with Raining Blood. Crazy Train number 9, and Ace of Spades by Motorhead number 10. So there's two songs ahead of Master of Puppets at number 3. Any idea what they are? One is a band you watched in concert not that long ago.
Well, yeah, it's probably Paradise City or it shouldn't be Paradise City. It should be probably more like Mr. Brownstone or something. And it shouldn't be out Metallica, as much as I love Guns N' Roses. Was it Welcome to the Jungle?
It's Welcome to the Jungle, number 2, yeah. And I agree with you. It should not be Master of Puppets. Any idea what number 1 is on VH1's list?
Is it a metal band? Because I even consider Guns N' Roses more hard rock.
But this is maybe the metal band, maybe the first mainstream metal band.
So it's not Pantera, which isn't on this list, and it's a travesty.
Pantera is on the list. Their highest song on here is number 16.
Yeah, which is a travesty. Like,
you know what? And number 15 is Rage Against the Machine, which I don't really consider a metal band.
No, not at all. Yeah. Even Typo Negative, which is one of my favorite bands, which is goth metal.
Yeah. Way back. Who brought metal to the masses?
So is it Helter Skelter by the Beatles?
Nope.
I wasn't sure how far back you wanted me to go.
Well, back to the 70s.
Is it Sabbath?
It is Sabbath. Which song do you think?
It's not a Power in the Iron Man.
It's Iron Man number one.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I would have put War Pigs, but all right.
Fair enough. But Sabbath number one, I don't think you can really complain about, right?
No, I'm just complaining like it's VH1.
Yeah. Good point. Master of Puppets was also, Q Magazine placed it at number 22 in its 100 Greatest Guitar Tracks list, which I don't know, I think could be higher. Martin Popov's book, The Top 500 Heavy Metal Songs of All Time, had Master of Puppets number 2. I wonder what number 1 was.
I don't know.
Again, a Black Sabbath song. Not Iron Man, though. He went with Paranoid.
I would have been more interested in Headbangers Ball, like top 10 metal songs of all time.
Right. I know Total Guitar Magazine had this as the number 1 greatest riff of all time.
I would have cared more about Matt Pinfield's list than VH1's.
Well, I don't have any information on that one. I know Metal Hammer magazine ranked the song number 1 on its list of 50 best Metallica songs of all time. Would you consider this the best Metallica song of all time?
I've already told you, Fade to Black is my favorite Metallica song of all time. I think that this is,
what do you consider the best Metallica song of all time?
I hate doing the best because when you do the best, you got to sit there and measure like, from some scientific method. And I don't go by that. I go by how does a song make me feel? And like, I love this song, but do I love this song more than Harvester of Sorrow? I'm not sure. Right. Do I love this song more than Sanitarium? I don't know. I love them all. Like, I go to a Metallica concert, and it's one of the few concerts, every fucking song they play, I'm like, yeah, like, it's the greatest song ever, because at that moment, it is, until they play the next song.
I will say, I do like Master of Puppets better than Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush.
I don't want to slam Running Up That Hill. I'm actually really happy Running Up That Hill got the notoriety it's gotten and has deserved. I wanted to talk about this song because it's one of both our favorite songs. I was using, because the way the needle drops in Old School was a fist pump moment for me watching that movie in the theater, and I'll never forget that. And that was my original reason for wanting to talk about the song, is I wanted to talk about like that fist pump moment watching this comedy in the movie theater. And then Eddie Munson, who is this character we all knew in high school, whether we were in Eddie Munson or we knew in Eddie Munson, like that person existed in every high school in the 80s, yeah. Right? He's the career senior who's like on his third or fourth senior year. He knows all the metal songs. He plays D&D. Like, he's into what a lot of us nerds would call a lot of the cool shit. He's what we learn what's cool from. He smokes in the boys' room and all this stuff that goes on. He's probably the guy that you could score some drugs off of. And here he is, and he's kind of this loser in this where he's chickening out. He watches this girl die in his trailer home and is mortified, and then is kind of framed for the murder because of how it goes down and has to hide from it throughout the course of the series. And he's constantly running away from stuff throughout the series until he confronts them. And there's a scene earlier where they go raid a gun store and a weapon store, and they get all these great weapons. And the best weapon of all in this season is Eddie's guitar, which is the distraction, which is what Corey talked about earlier. And his power of song, what he chooses to use as his weapon, what he wields, is Metallica, which is the most metal thing I've ever seen on TV or in movies.
It's absolutely perfect. The perfect marriage of music and film, which is what we're doing this whole show for. And this is a great example of it. Like we said, Master Puppets been used a few times, We talked about Old School. It was also used in Zombieland, Double Tap. It was played in the opening credits. So even if you're not a huge Metallica fan, you've heard Master of Puppets somewhere, I'm sure.
No, and thanks for mentioning that, because I had originally thought to mention how much I loved the use of Master of Puppets in that opening sequence. And then, sure enough, I got distracted because, first of all, Old School, but then Stranger Things really rocking my world this last week. And it was kismet, Corey, because I said to you, we're going to talk about Master of Puppets the next time we hang out. I did not think that we were talking about it in this fashion.
It's a great moment in Old School. It's a better moment in Stranger Things. I think we could both agree on that.
I don't argue with you. I put the Stranger Things moment among the greatest uses of music in anything I've ever seen. And that includes the Kate Bush use earlier in this season.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. You know who else would agree? I believe next week's guest would also agree. One Christy McGee, who is a pretty big fan of Mr. Hetfield and this band. And John, do you have a little insight on what Christy might want to talk about next week?
I don't. Like, I never know where that woman's coming from. I can't get inside her head. We probably should have invited her to talk about this stuff. We recorded this really late at night for her, way past our bedtime. But here we are, and it was time to cover Metallica. And I am so happy we did this tonight, my friend.
Me too. I absolutely love this. John, as we wrap up here tonight, where can the folks find you on the internet?
Oh, I'm at John Mariano NY on Twitter. Also, you have me wielding this Twitter feed for Backtrack's theme music. Mm-hmm. So I can be found harassing people on that account once in a while. Occasionally, because thanks to you, I have access to the Aerosmith, Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. I can pop on that Twitter account and mess with people too now. So if people are being nice on those accounts, that's generally Corey. But if they're acting like me on my actual account, it's me behind the curtain.
There you have it. And you can find me on one of my many shows, the first one being And the Podcast Will Rock with Mark Meyer, where we're breaking down the Van Halen catalog. And, of course, on the aforementioned Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited with Mr. John Mariano. And you can find me here next week with John and our special guest, Christy McGee, talking about whatever the heck she wants to talk about. But until then, on behalf of John, my name is Corey. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
He could have run. Could have saved himself. He fought and died to protect this town. Ah, this town that hated him.
Oh, God.
I didn't run away this time, right?
No. You didn't run. He isn't just innocent. He's a hero.
I think it's my year, Anderson. I think it's finally my year.
I wish everyone had gotten to know him. Really know him. Because they would have loved him.